Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Wombat Sports Podcast. No, somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm sorry about that. I'm Mark McHugh. I'm your host. I'm very privileged to have a very talented doctor who is a double board certified plastic surgeon and medical director at the Beverly Hospital and Olympia Medical Centers, and also the Cepha Surgery in Los Angeles, California. We're on with plastic surgeon Dr. Babak Dadvand on with us right now. How you doing, doctor?
Hi, good morning. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in terms of plastic surgery and how you decided on that specialty?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. I was an undergraduate. I went to Penn, and I actually majored in fine arts and chemistry. I always had an interest in art, and was actually pretty good at drawing and painting. But I always knew I was going to go into medical school. And when I went into medical school, I realized I wanted to be a surgeon. It just it spoke to me, and so I went into a general surgery program. And during that training is where I got my first kind of exposure to plastic surgery, where we had to rotate for a month on the plastic surgery service. And what really intrigued me was, you know, they put us on the reconstructive service. And so being able to approach different problems that patients would have creatively and kind of think outside the box to come up with solutions to help these patients. You know, when you have an appendix or a gallbladder that needs to come out, there's not much creativity that needs to go into treating that. You just go in and mechanically take it out. And plastic surgery, I guess, kind of subconsciously spoke to that kind of creative aspect of me in terms of thinking about how problems can be solved in different ways and get patients the results that they want. And so I went on and did a plastic surgery residency after that and became board certified in both general and plastic surgery, and I guess the rest is history.
And you also have to, I guess, have an eye for symmetry and to be able to recognize, I guess, for lack of a better term, beauty. In terms of your job as well, I mean that obviously comes with a keen eye and a creative division. I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think you know if fine arts training did anything for me, it was really train my eye and hone my eye. I mean, a lot of people can look at something and think something might be off or not quite right. I have the ability, but I think it's through the training, for the fine arts training, to be able to not only see something that's off, but really verbalize exactly why it is. And I take those skills into the operating room. You know, it's something that you have to be able to see in three dimensions and treat the human form three-dimensionally. It's not a front and a back or front and a side. It's kind of one part of the body kind of molds into the other part, and being able to conceptualize that in a 3D way, I think really gives me an advantage as far as the fine arts background that I had.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to hear that. You know, we think plastic surgery, we think majority females as well. Over your term, you know, as a doctor, have you seen the male side of things grow as the years turn by in terms of wanting plastic surgery procedures?
Yeah, I think, you know, overall, there has been a greater reach of plastic surgery to the males, I think both in general and especially in my practice specifically. I think one of the things is that, you know, the difference between now and, say, maybe 15, 20 years ago is people are a lot more open about plastic surgery, and specifically their own plastic surgery, and it's more talked about. It's more in the social conscience. It's on TV shows, so there's more general exposure to it, and it's not just deemed as something for the rich and famous and for the, you know, for a specific gender. And I think that especially in the last maybe 5 to 8 years, nationally and specifically in Los Angeles, there has been much increase in the male, to the point where I think male plastic surgery patients are the fastest rising percentage of plastic surgery patients there are now, as opposed to maybe 5 years ago. And it's obviously in my practice, you know, I deal with a lot of men. I specialize in a lot of gynecomastia surgery, especially over the last 5 years. I definitely see that trend.
You know, what would be your explanation why that trend is growing? I mean, is it the fact that a lot of men are being a little bit more self-conscious about how they look and wanting to improve the way that they look in front of women, or in front of their in front of their mates, as it were?
Yeah, I think the number one, I think the fact that it's become so common now in popular culture, whether it's TV, whether it's radio, whether it's magazines and advertisements, it's everywhere. And this is dated back for over 10 years, the TV shows. And I think once that stuff starts to creep into the popular culture, people get more exposed to it, and they say, oh, maybe. Something that I didn't think of before, I'm starting to think about now, and actually there's a pretty straightforward or easy treatment for it. And so, I think that it's a combination of those things. And then, obviously, the more people that do plastic surgery, the higher the chance that you'll know someone who's had something done. And then, you talk to them and their experience, and that may be enough of the motivation to spur that person on to at least seek a consultation to see if they can improve themselves. And I think the other thing is there's, the one trepidation that people still have is they don't want to look like they've had plastic surgery. And I think the most successful surgeries are the ones where people don't realize that you've had something done, but they know that there's something improved about you. You look more rejuvenated, more refreshed, more well-rested. They ask if you've just been on a vacation or if you've lost some weight. Those are the most successful types of plastic surgery. And as our technology gets better, our techniques get better, we're able to offer that on a more consistent basis to patients. So it lends itself even more to having people, especially men, who may have been a little bit timid, to at least seek the consultation and see if they can do anything.
Okay, let's talk about one of your more popular popular surgeries, gynecomastia. Can you tell us a little bit, first of all, for those who don't know what gynecomastia is, please explain that the condition and maybe some of the reasons or the causes why we, males do get gynecomastia.
Yeah, absolutely. So gynecomastia, if you break it down, it comes from a Greek word, gyne, which means female or feminine, and then mastia, which means breast. So basically, gynecomastia just means that having a chest that looks more feminine or a fuller chest, which obviously in a male is not ideal. And there are a lot of causes of it. And I think number one, the largest percentage of guys who come in, probably almost 40-50%, we're not exactly sure the cause. But the other 50-60%, there can be anything from medications, for instance, testosterone or steroids or testosterone boosters, and some anti-seizures, some heart medications. It could be a wide range of medications. Even some hair replacement medications like Propecia have some side effects related to gynecomastia. But then there could be other things like hormonal imbalances and endocrine issues, thyroid conditions. And then there's a genetic component as well. I've seen this run in families, and that's also something to make note during the consultation. It's a really, it's one of these things that maybe 5 years ago nobody talked about. And even now, it's not as common as, say, other issues in plastic surgery, but it's definitely much more common than it was even 5 years ago. And I think part of the reason why is guys are now learning about it and learning that there's a name to this and there's something that can actually be done about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to say the least in terms of this as well. And, I think, I think a lot of guys think that exercise or diet can improve this condition. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, a lot of guys are coming in to get loose skin taken care of after they lose a lot of weight. But tell me a little bit about diet and exercise in terms of this condition in particular, and what it does and if it could help with the condition in terms of your surgery.
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it's something that comes up in every consultation that I do. And so basically, if every guy has two things in their chest, they have breast tissue and they have fatty tissue. So having breast tissue is normal. It's when you have an excess of breast tissue, that's called gynecomastia. So gynecomastia is having excess breast tissue that's giving the chest a more feminine shape. But some guys can have excess fatty tissue as well, and that can also give the same shape. And so if a guy comes in, for instance, and I examine them, and they may be a little bit overweight, or they have a lot of excess fatty tissue but not really excess breast tissue, then, technically diet and exercise can improve that, just like it could any, excess fatty tissue anywhere else on their body, like their belly or their love handles. However, if it's true gynecomastia, meaning their amount of breast tissue that they have is enlarged, and you can tell the difference on exam. Breast tissue tends to be firmer, and you know, it feels like rubber. It doesn't feel soft and squishy. And usually these guys are not overweight. They're normal body weight or really in very good shape, like some of my bodybuilder patients. And they just have this chest, this tissue under their nipples and on their chest that's out of proportion. And so for that, you can't lose that with diet and exercise. It doesn't melt away, quote unquote. And the one thing that guys do is they start working out and try and doing a lot of chest exercises to make it go away. What they end up doing is, you know, they're building up their pecs, and because this tissue is sitting on top of the pecs, in a lot of cases, it just ends up pushing that tissue even more forward. They see that it's not getting better. They get discouraged. They stop working out completely, and then they come see me, you know. And it's one of those things that I say, look, keep exercising. You know, you want to stay healthy. I can fix the gynecomastia, and then you haven't lost ground on the rest of your body.
Yeah, I mean it is. I mean it's interesting to say the least, the difference between one and the other. And like I said, if you know there is always that chance that there's excess tissue there that you could always help out with. You know, tell me a little bit about the surgery itself. How you know how that kind of you know how you get some of that the breast tissue taken care of, and you know obviously you have a good enough eye to know the symmetry about that as well, but tell us a little bit about the process.
Right. So the surgery really starts during the examination and the consultation. So I always tell my prospective patients, look, your breasts, they're brothers, they're not twins, right? So there's always going to be some asymmetry between the two. Some of that I can correct in surgery, some of them I can't. For instance, if a pec muscle on one side is bigger than the other, well, I can't really address that. But when I look at them in the exam, I look for four things. Do they have excess breast tissue? Do they have excess fatty tissue? Do they have excess skin? And what's their nipple position? And depending on what combination of those four things they may have determines the best technique, because you can't do the same operation on everybody and get consistent results. So I'll give you an example. For instance, someone who may have some excess breast tissue and some excess fatty tissue, but their skin tone is good and their nipple position is good. So in those cases, I would do the surgery to focus on both of those things. So the fatty tissue I would address by doing liposuction. And what that does is it brings down the amount of fatty tissue in the chest, but it also contours the rest of the chest and feathers everything out. However, it's not going to address the breast tissue excess that's sitting right under their nipple. And so on the operating table, you see that. You know, you do the liposuction, I sit them up, and then everything looks great, but it's still kind of coning out right in the middle. And so what I end up doing is I make a small incision, maybe about an inch or so, from, if you think of the areola, it's on the lower part of the areola from like 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock, and I go in and I very carefully take out the excess breast tissue. Now, I don't take out all the breast tissue because it's unnecessary and it can lead to the nipple sinking in and caving in. You got to leave some tissue behind to act like a support for the nipple and the areola. And so I sit them up, and once I'm happy with how their chest looks in a seated position, that's when I close the incision and then put them in their compression vest, and then they wake up, and you know, and after being in the recovery room, they go home. It's an outpatient procedure that takes a couple hours at the most, and they go home the same day.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how long it takes you to do the process, and it seems like, you know, I wouldn't say pretty straightforward, but you know, it's one that's relatively it doesn't take a lot of time to be able to do it.
Mark, one thing I will say is the entire finesse of the surgery has to do with how much tissue you leave behind. Anybody can go in there and just take everything out, but that's when people usually run into problems. It's having the experience to know how much to leave behind so it's not too much tissue and still causing it to kind of protrude, but it's not too little tissue and causing it to everything to kind of sink in. So that's where the experience comes in with the surgery.
And what do you think roughly is the recovery time for the surgery?
So in my practice specifically, I can't speak for other plastic surgeons, but in my practice, I'm a big believer in using compression vests and not laying off exercise for the first, you know, several weeks. So depending on the technique that I'm using, it's anywhere between 3 and 6 weeks. The bigger cases where there's a lot of liposuction, a lot of breast tissue being removed, I really don't like them exercising for about 5-6 weeks. And I think the reason why is because when you start being more active too soon, well, if you're really active early on, you increase the chance of bleeding after surgery. But even once you're outside that risk, you're just going to swell up. And when you're swollen for a long time, it increases the inflammation in the area, and it can just kind of delays your getting to the final result. So I tell my patients beforehand multiple times, and we make it very clear that, listen, when you're planning for this surgery, you got to block out about a 3 to 5 week period after the surgery in your life where you can give your body the time that it deserves to recover. And most of these guys, I tell them, look, you've had this problem for years. Give yourself that, 1 month block to let yourself recover from the surgery, and that way you can get on with your life afterwards.
Yeah, you mentioned the incision, the small incision that you had to make as well. I mean, that's basically it, isn't it? That incision to remove the breast tissue is a probably relatively small one, and it probably heals up pretty fast, right?
Yeah, if you're not dealing with any skin excess or nipple position, which most of the cases don't require removing excess skin or moving the nipple, then yeah, that incision under the under part of the areola, it's very small. It heals exceptionally well. I tell every patient I've never had to redo one of my own incisions. I think partly because my technique is really good, but also where that incision is, and no matter what race or ethnicity a guy is, their areola skin is always a different color than their regular skin. And so when you put that incision right at that junction, it just camouflages really well. It has nothing to do with how much hair they have on their chest or anything. These just heal very well.
Yeah, I mean, that's great to hear, and I hope that more guys look into this if they feel that they do have gynecomastia, or at least maybe see you for a consultation. If it is fatty tissue, then they know that they can get rid of that through exercise and diet. I think it's really great to be able to hear some of this stuff, and to be able to hear the fact that you're not alone in this. There are other guys that have gone through this, and it's a like I said, a relatively I don't say simple procedure, but it's really straightforward for people to kind of come in and do it as an outpatient.
It's a problem that has a solution. Right. I mean, it's a problem that has a solution. And a lot of times guys are like, I didn't even know there was something that could be done with this. And I think another population of guys that I treat are teenagers, and I think that's even more, it's actually not uncommon in teenagers, boys going through puberty, to get gynecomastia. Some studies show up to 50-60% of boys going through puberty get some form of increased breast growth. Now, granted, a large majority of them, 98% or more, it goes away after a couple few years, but there is that percentage where even after 3 years, it doesn't go away. And so I see teenagers all the time in my office. They come in with their parents, and I ask them, how long have you had it? If it's been over 3 years and they have normal hormone levels and no other underlying causes, then I will recommend doing surgery, because one of the things that happens in teenagers, even more so in adult males, is there's a lot of pressure in school and bullying and being made fun of and teasing, and I've seen some really sad cases of guys, teenagers coming in just being pulled out of school or homeschooled because they were just bullied so much, and you do the surgery and they're reenlisted into school and they get on with their regular life. And so it really is an impactful surgery in a lot of ways that people may not even recognize. I'm in Beverly Hills, and it's a really active outdoor city, and you can imagine like having to think about your chest every time you leave, what color shirt you're going to wear, how many layers you're going to wear, not being able to go to the beach or to the pool or play with your kids, at the pool or at the beach. It really does impact these guys' lives to the point where it even affects their posture. They tend to slump forward instead of sitting straight up. And so I always tell my patients, I'm like, look, I know I've done my job when you can leave your house without thinking about your chest. And that's really the measure of success in a gynecomastia surgery. When these guys don't have to think of their chest, like most of us who don't have it, then the mission's been accomplished. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's really great to hear, be able to hear that. And, you know, obviously you've changed a lot of lives with the surgery, so it's great to be able to hear that as well. You know, I said, obviously Los Angeles is a big, big community, and I'm pretty sure that was one of the reasons why you decided to put your practice out there. I mean, obviously there's no lack of patients out there for you. You know, it's great to be able to hear that as well, and great to be able to hear that the male end of things is going well for you as well. You know, yes. What other male procedures do you think, you know, some people should be aware about, some of these guys should be aware about?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. So there's, you know, the different types of male procedures that especially I do in my practice range anywhere from, you know, obviously gynecomastia, which we talked about, but even just general liposuction. I mean, there's certain problem areas that most men have that include their lower abdomen, their love handles. And even I see this in guys who work out a lot and eat right, and they just have these stubborn areas that don't get better. And liposuction is such a straightforward way, and with really minimal downtime, and to really get them the results that they were trying to get naturally through diet and exercise. So I think liposuction is one. There's some cases where I do abdominal etching as well, meaning defining the six-pack muscles. And that's always a fun kind of surgery. It's a little bit different take on just liposuction. You're not just trying to flatten everything. You're trying to really highlight where their six-pack is. And what, you know, that depends on having the right candidate for it. You know, you have to have someone who's, you know, in relatively decent shape, and you're really trying to highlight their six-pack. You can't do that on someone who's just kind of overweight and has no real definite shape. It's not the right candidate, but in the perfect candidate, it has a very successful procedure. And then on the other side of the spectrum, a lot more men are coming in for facial work, you know, whether it's eyelid surgery or neck lift and lower facelift. You know, like I said, and this may be a little bit different in my demographic as opposed to maybe some other demographics in the country, but men are a lot more aware of how they look. You know, they're more aware of, you know, how they look in the job market and wanting to have that rejuvenated look but still natural. It leads them to come in for facial procedures as well, and not just surgeries, you know, facial injections like Botox and filler. And even in my area specifically, even coming in for skincare and peels and facials. So it really is, and I think in 5 years it's going to be even more accepted and even more popular in men. And I think that's just a general trend.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see that, you know. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, the idea of, you know, obviously you're in the middle of this, you know, the idea of media, and, you know, obviously Los Angeles is one of the meccas of media. You know, we're seeing guys on television looking their best, and, you know, sometimes guys just can't get to that point, so they need a little bit of help from guys like you. So it's
right.
Very interesting to see that as well. Anything else you want to promote, doctor, at all?
You know, I think, like I said, if for whatever plastic surgery issue that someone may be having, let alone gynecomastia, I think the most important thing is to really seek a consultation with someone who's board certified, who's experienced in it, someone who's not just dabbling in it. I think, like everything else, the more experience someone has at something, the better they are at it. And so what I really recommend to patients is, you know, to seek out someone in their local area that is, you know, very qualified at it. And if they can't find that, be willing to travel. I do Skype consults. I have patients coming in as far as Afghanistan, I think was the farthest, but Europe, Canada, and all the way to the East Coast. You know, it's something that, you know, this is something that has to be done right the first time, you know, and if it's not, then it becomes much harder to correct in revision surgery. So I say to patients or prospective patients, really seek out, you know, a board-certified plastic surgeon who's experienced in that procedure. And the best way to know is just to, you know, do an internet search. I mean, my website's up there. It's Dr. Dadvand, plasticsurgery.com, and that's just Dr. and Dadvand. And then I have another site just devoted to gynecomastia, which is losangelesgynecomastia.org. And so it's really taking the effort of doing the research and not just jumping into it. Most of these patients have thought about these their issues for years. It's not a rash decision. So just finding someone that you feel comfortable with who's exceptionally trained and is going to offer good care during the surgery as well as after the surgery.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to hear. And you mentioned, you know, Afghanistan being one of your longest ones. But, you know, as a doctor, I believe you probably do some charity cases as well. And, you know, tell me a little bit about that in that end, too. I mean, have you done a lot of pro bono work as part of your practice?
Yeah, I've done pro bono work. It's obviously it's not really in the cosmetic realm. It's more in the reconstructive realm. Whether it's you know, burn patients with skin grafts or breast reconstruction after breast cancer, or just even wound closure in people who just don't have the means or the insurance and just be able to reconstruct them and get them a better functional, you know, life so they can get on with their life. I mean, I think, you know, it's one of those things that, listen, cosmetic surgery is highly satisfying, and I really enjoy doing it. But you get a totally different sense of gratification when you're doing something to help someone's, you know, quality and function of life, you know, their functional aspect, and you're getting them back so they can start working or they can, you know, get out and face the world again. It's one of those, you know, sense of gratitude that I really enjoy. And it's a little bit different than the type of gratitude and satisfaction you get from just cosmetic surgeries.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to mention it, because I think some people don't either realize or don't think about the fact that there is so much great work that you do outside the plastic surgery realm in terms of helping patients get back their lives in terms of any kind of major accidents or major incidents as well. So I wanted to make sure we mentioned that as well. You already mentioned your website, so you definitely, if you ever want to do a consult with the doctor, please do so. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think we touched on all of it. I think obviously if someone wants to, the easiest way to get in touch with my office specifically is just to call. It's at 310-278-4200. And then from there we can determine what's the best way to consult, whether it's through Skype if it's out of town or an in-person consult. They're complimentary. I don't charge for consults. It's just kind of a philosophy of mine. And it's really the best way to get started for any patient.
Well, it's great to be able to talk to you, doctor, and you know, best of luck with your practice. And it was great to be able to talk to you about a little bit about the gynecomastia and the kind of trend for men to start doing plastic surgery. So thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely, thank you for having me. You have a great rest of the day.
You too. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Perfect.
Bye.
Take care. Bye bye.
Dr. Davidan, everybody, you guys can check him out. Dr. Dadvan, that's D-A-D-V-A-N-D, plasticsurgery.com. You guys can check out the information there as well. Coming up next week, we should be at our regular time, I believe. Actually, it'll be 12:30 next week. We'll be a little bit earlier. We'll be having writer and author Allison Blackman, who is a pioneer of online blogging. We'll be talking to her a little bit about her advice columns and a little bit of what she does in terms of fashion and makeup and all that as well. So you guys can too. We're going to check that out 12:30 next week here on the show on Wednesday. And then we'll take a week off after that, and then we'll have comedian Sean Pawlowski will be on with us. I might have another guest on that show as well, and that'll be on the 15th of March. So we're pretty much booked for the next couple of weeks. Please see us on Twitter at SWIV, at SWIV, and somewhere in Vegas on Facebook, VegasPodcasting.com. I need to update the site. I'm sorry. We'll have to have some of the old episodes posted on there as well. With that in mind, we'll see you guys next week, 30 p.m. Pacific, with one of the advice sisters, Allison Blackman. And we'll also, so it'll be a week from Wednesday today, which is Wednesday at 12:30 with Allison Blackman. With that in mind, we'll talk to you soon.